the spin wave excitations in the field polarized states of these magnets, we can uniquely determine the microscopic exchange Hamiltonian for these materials. So the work that I'm talking about today was done in collaboration with these people here. In particular, the theoretical work was done by Leon Balentz and his student Lucille Savary. So today, my goal is to briefly cover the motivation for the effective spin 1/2 anisotropic exchange model for the magnetic moments on the pyrochlore lattice. That's what we're using to determine the models for these systems. Then I'm going to talk about the time of flight neutron scattering method, which has really enabled us to very robustly determine the parameters in these models. Then I'll give you our two examples that we've recently worked on. That's erbium titanate and ytterbium titanate. Erbium titanate's Hamiltonian now, I think, definitively shows that quantum order by disorder is the mechanism for selecting the ground state in that material. And ytterbium titanate has shown us that there's possibly quite a lot of exotic physics that can come into this material, including a quantum spin liquid. Exactly what Patrick Lee was just talking about, actually. So that's a very exciting possibility. I think I do kind of have to stand over here. Yeah. So both of these materials are part of this class of materials called the rare earth titanates. And I've shown the general formula here, where R is a trivalent rare earth ion. Titanium, in this case, is in the 4+ oxidation state, so it's non-magnetic. So the only magnetism in these systems comes from the rare earth ions. And they live on the pyrochlore lattice, which I've shown here. This is an array of corner-sharing tetrahedra. It's three-dimensional. It's actually cubic. And one of the great things about it and why it's so famous is that it has a proclivity towards geometric frustration. Of course, geometric frustration means that we can't simultaneously minimize all the exchange bonds due to geometric constraints. And so what you find is that because for different rare earth ions, we get slightly different types of anisotropy. So there's, for example, different types of single ion anisotropy and also exchange anisotropy. We can realize a whole variety of exotic magnetic ground states on this lattice. So I've listed some of the examples here, some of the well-studied rare earth titanates. I'll just briefly mention that holmium and dysprosium titanates, these are what are known as the classical dipolar spin ices. They're quite well understood, and now they've been getting a lot more attention because it's been realized that the excitations from this state can be thought of as magnetic monopoles that arise from the Coulomb phase. So these two, the spin ices, the reason they have the properties they do is because their single ion anisotropy leads to an Ising-like moment that points either into or out of the tetrahedra. Now, erbium and ytterbium titanate are sort of complements to this case because their single ion anisotropy is easy plane-like, or it's XY-like. So that's sort of the moments like to lie perpendicular to the local 1-1-1 direction. So I'm going to talk about these today. So first I'll explain the crystal field effects and how and why we can think of these as effectively spin 1/2, even though their total J's are actually much larger than that. And then I'll try to motivate the exchange anisotropic Hamiltonian. So the great thing about these two materials is that they have very well isolated Cramer's doublets as their ground state for the crystal field Hamiltonian. So basically, the total J, which is the spin plus orbital angular momentum, is split by the local crystal fields that are produced by the other ions in the crystal. And in the case of both of these systems, in particular, ytterbium titanate, the next excited crystal field level is at a ridiculously high energy, like 680 Kelvin. And keep in mind that we're studying these things below one Kelvin. So we're very well isolated from the next excited crystal field level. Same thing for erbium titanate, the next excited crystal field level is at 76 Kelvin, so we're pretty safe in saying that we're in a well-isolated Cramer's doublet. The significance of this is that we actually can think of it as a spin 1/2 because it has 2 degrees of freedom. So this is interesting. It's not a real spin 1/2 because it has orbital contributions to the magnetic, to the angular momentum. And this leads to things like the single ion anisotropy, which I already mentioned is planar for both of these cases. And it also leads to the idea that possibly in this effective spin 1/2 model, we should be considering anisotropic exchange interactions. So not only that, the rare earth ions themselves are very heavy, so we expect spin orbit coupling is very strong. So anisotropic exchange is quite possible for these systems. It's been shown that there are 4 symmetry allowed exchange interactions for the rare earth position in these materials. And you can write the spin Hamiltonian like this, where this J mu nu is, those are components of an exchange tensor, which I've shown here. And these are our 4 independent exchange constants, which we'd like to determine. A more physically revealing way of writing this Hamiltonian is in terms of a quantization along the local 1-1-1 directions. That's what I've shown up here. These are the directions that are important for spin ice. And when you write the Hamiltonian like this, you get, again, 4 exchange parameters. But now they're grouped into these JZZ, J plus minus, J plus plus, and JZ plus minus. And these represent exchanges between the local 1-1-1 directions of these effective spins and then the planar directions here. So this is the model that we're going to be using, and we're using inelastic neutron scattering. We're going to try to determine those 4 parameters. So the method that we used, which is fantastic for these types of studies, is called time-of-flight neutron scattering. The data I'm showing you today is from this instrument. It's called the Disk Chopper Spectrometer, or DCS, which is at the NIST Center for Neutron Research. The basics of time-of-flight neutron scattering are that you produce a monochromatic beam of neutrons from a reactor source, scatter from your sample, which I've shown as a cylinder here, and then the neutrons scatter into a wall of detectors here. There's 913 helium-3 detectors on this wall. So that's how you get your angular information, which tells you about the real space correlations. But the thing that makes this time-of-flight neutron scattering is that you can actually measure the time it takes for neutrons to scatter to this wall of detectors. And in doing so, you learn something about the energy transfer of the neutron, because they'll be going faster or slower depending on how much energy they've gained or lost. So this, in principle, means that you can measure static correlations and dynamic correlations simultaneously. So it's a really great way to get a very comprehensive view of what's going on in your system. And the data sets that we get from this are quite large. They're actually 3-dimensional data sets. So this is an example from a terbium titanate where we have 2 momentum directions in reciprocal space, and then on the vertical axis is the energy transfer of the neutrons. Of course, the color represents the intensity of the neutrons that are detected with that energy transfer at that position in reciprocal space. And the great thing about data sets like this is that you can slice and dice them however you'd like. So for example, we can take a constant energy slice at energy transfer of 0, this would be the elastic scattering, and that tells us about the spatial correlations. Or, and for the purpose of this talk, what I'll be showing you are slices that go through this energy dimension as well. And you can do this in any direction in reciprocal space that you choose. So this is very powerful. We can actually come up with several directions showing the dispersion of spin wave excitations. So now that we know the model that we're using and what technique we're going to use to measure the exchange interactions, I'm going to move on and show you that we've done this for erbium and ytterbium titanate. This erbium titanate work was very, very recent. We put it on the archive last month. There's the reference up there. Erbium titanate is actually not a frustrated material. It's known that it orders into an antiferromagnetic ground state below 1.2 Kelvin. But the mechanism that leads to the selection of this state, which is called the Psi-2 state, is still the matter of some discussion within the literature. So what we wanted to do is, first of all, determine the exchange parameters for this anisotropic spin Hamiltonian, and then see whether it gives us any clues as to what causes the selection of this ground state. In order to do that, we're going to go through the quantum critical point that's known to exist at a field of 1.7 Tesla and access the polarized paramagnetic state where we can measure sharp spin wave excitations. So here in the top row, this is the data that's from DCS, the instrument that I was showing you. Actually, for erbium titanate, we did an unusually comprehensive set of measurements in that we applied a field both along the 1-1-0 and the 1-1-1 direction. And what this means is that we can use our model to produce linear spin wave theory and try to reproduce these excitations. And we did that, and we fit all of these data sets, which are all along several different directions in reciprocal space, simultaneously for both field directions. And we come up with the following exchange parameters. So I mentioned that erbium titanate is a planar magnet. It has local easy planes. And you can see that come out in the exchange parameters because these planar exchanges are larger than the other two that are related to the Ising axis. So this is what we basically expected for erbium titanate. And it plays out well. So we know that these are a nice description. It captures all of the features of the spin wave excitations in the quantum polarized state. So now that we have our Hamiltonian in hand, we can also study the model and see what it predicts for this material. So what we can show at the mean field level is that there's actually a continuous degeneracy of the spin configurations in the ground state. And that continuous degeneracy can be parameterized by an angle called alpha. So this is a picture of what that degeneracy looks like. The green arrows here represent the local x-axis for the material. And you can see the spins are confined to these planes, and they're rotated through the same angle alpha to reach these different ground states that are possible. Of course, we know that in real life, there's no continuous degeneracy. It selects one particular configuration called the Psi-2 state. So we want to know what's responsible for breaking this degeneracy. And we can show that the degeneracy can't be broken by any bilinear terms in the Hamiltonian between the spins. So it leaves things like quantum order by disorder, or, for example, six-spin interactions, which are expected to be very, very weak. Quantum order by disorder has actually been suggested before for erbium titanate, but there's problems with it when you use a very simple Hamiltonian. But for our Hamiltonian, which is slightly more, appropriate for erbium titanate, we want to see if quantum order by disorder is responsible for this selection. So what we can say is that by general symmetry arguments, anything that breaks this degeneracy will choose one of 12 states. Six of them are what's called the alpha equals zero series, and six of them are the alpha equals pi by six series. We know from our linear spin wave theory that alpha equals zero is preferred by quantum order by disorder. So we want to show that alpha equals zero exists in erbium titanate. And long story short, it does. This is the Psi-2 state. We can actually calculate the spin wave excitations in the zero field state, in the Psi-2 state, and compared to our measurements. And we see that we get a better agreement in the spin wave excitations for this alpha equals zero state, so that's good. But you might, if you look at this long enough, you'd say, okay, there's not a whole lot of difference between these two calculations. So we look a little bit further, and we see that the real smoking gun here is that is the field dependence of the Bragg peak intensities. So this is for a field along 1-1-0. We see a very sharp increase in the 220 Bragg peak intensity, and this is only consistent with the formation of Psi-2 domains in the zero field state. So this is what we're taking as the definitive evidence for quantum order by disorder in erbium titanate. And you can tell this is an important point because it came up in flames. So keep that in mind for later. So this is what we've done for erbium titanate, and we think that it resolves the question as to what's the mechanism for the selection of the ground state. Okay. So now I'm going to move on to ytterbium titanate. This was work that we published back in October in PhysRevX. It's with the same group of people using the same Hamiltonian trying to extract those four exchange parameters. Ytterbium titanate is still quite a puzzle when it comes to the experimental properties and also the theoretical description. In zero field, we know that there are unusual 2D magnetic correlations that develop and that there is a transition at 265 millikelvin. But the nature of the ground state below the transition is still somewhat debated. Some samples seem to show a long-range ordered ferromagnetic ground state, while other samples show a disordered, short-range correlated ground state that's dynamic. So that is still unresolved, but of course we're working on that as experimentalists. But leaving that all aside, we can take this material through its quantum critical point, which is at 0.5 tesla, measure the spin wave excitations and do exactly the same thing we did with erbium titanate. So that's what I'm showing here. So I'm showing actually two sets of data. One of them is at the 5 tesla, which is well within this field polarized regime. So you might expect this to be quite a classical type of state where spin wave theory would apply. And also, we took data at 2 tesla, and that's what I've shown here in this row. We fit the 5 tesla data in these five directions, and you can see that the spin wave calculations are almost exactly describing our data. It's a very good description. These exchange parameters, when we use our spin Hamiltonian and reduce the field to 2 tesla, we can very accurately reproduce the 2 tesla data as well. So this is a robust description of the Hamiltonian. And furthermore, the exchange parameters are actually pretty surprising in that the largest exchange is along the local 111 directions. This is opposite to the single ion and isotropy. So this is actually, Patrick was alluding to the fact that the planar and Ising components sort of compete with each other in this case. So this ferromagnetic large Ising-like exchange is what you'd expect for a spin ice type of material. But it's not a spin ice because it's got these other planar type of exchanges as well. And what these do is introduce quantum fluctuations into the system. And so we know now that ytterbium titanate can be thought of as a quantum spin ice. Again, important point, so flames. So this is going to be something that allows us to think about what the excitations in ytterbium titanate could be in the ground state. And I'll show you in a couple slides that there's already a prediction for this, and it's sort of independent of what the actual ground state is anyway. So that's very nice. One thing that we know for sure is that the quantum fluctuations strongly suppress the transition to long-range order, if there is one. So the mean field level, we expect a transition at 3.2 Kelvin, but we don't see one until around 265. So clearly the quantum fluctuations are playing a big role in this system in terms of the physics. Another thing that's come out after our work in PhysRevX was this plane of the phase diagram for this model, this effective spin 1/2 model with the anisotropic exchange on the pyrochlore lattice. And we can see that there's actually two very exotic phases here. One of them is a quantum spin liquid, and the other is called a Coulomb ferromagnet, which has similar types of properties. The quantum spin liquid, of course, is really fascinating, and we'd love to learn something about it by having a real material that we know is in this quantum spin liquid state. It has interesting emergent particles as its excitations, like an electric monopole, a magnetic monopole, and something called a gauge photon. So it'd be great if we could measure something about these as well. It turns out that if you take the exchange parameters for ytterbium titanate and you assume that J plus minus is zero, you end up in a conventional ferromagnetic ground state. So this is possible. This is possibly the case, although we'd like to know sort of how close we are to these exotic phases as well. And furthermore, J plus minus actually isn't zero, so this study needs to be extended along this axis as well. So it's... Yes. And I just want to mention that if we are, in fact, quite close to these phase boundaries, it might explain why there's so much variability in the magnetic ground states that's observed. just from small amounts of structural disorder in the samples. So that's one possibility. So now I'm going to take the opportunity to brag a little bit and say that this model has been extremely successful in describing several other features of that are observed experimentally. So for example, Chang et al. Showed with neutron diffraction these nice rods of scattering. We've measured these as well. These are the indication for those unusual 2D magnetic correlations that I was alluding to. But they've showed that they can actually reproduce those rods of scattering using parameters that are extremely close to the ones that we've determined. So we know that these 2D magnetic correlations come out of our model as well. And very, very recently, like last month, some work that Michelle Gingra was involved in has come out on the archive where they've shown that the high temperature specific heat, which is the dots here, is perfectly described, really, by the parameters by our effective spin 1/2 model. And this is without any fitting parameters, I think, right, Michelle? No fitting parameters there? No fitting parameters. So it lies perfectly on top of it. And just as a comparison, there are other proposed exchange parameters here that don't agree. So we know that this is a very good description of the material. And then in a very exciting turn of events, there's been a prediction by Wan et al. Showing that quantum strings might be expected to be fundamental excitations of a quantum spin ice state. And so these excitations would be, they're sort of like the Dirac strings in the classical spin ices, if people are familiar with that. Basically, we'd need to apply a field along 100 and then look at the signatures for these quantum strings in inelastic neutron scattering experiments. So this is something we're definitely interested in pursuing. And okay, so with that, I think I'm going to conclude. So the major point that I want to take home, what I'd like you to take home today, is that all of this work that we've done in determining the models, this has all been made possible by having extremely detailed measurements of the spin wave excitations. So this is we think, the most direct way to determine the exchange parameters in such a complicated Hamiltonian. And that's because you can think of the neutrons coming in actually bending the spins away from their ideal configuration, which directly measures the way that they're interacting with each other. So having those inelastic neutron scattering data on the spin wave excitations is essential for this type of study. Once we had those large data sets, we fit those spectra to the effective spin 1/2 anisotropic exchange Hamiltonian and extracted four parameters for each of these materials. And we find that we can definitively show that quantum order by disorder is the mechanism to select the Psi 2 ground state in erbium titanate. And meanwhile, ytterbium titanate we know now can be described as a quantum spin ice type material. And that this brings about all sorts of ideas for exotic physics that could be at play. And of course, we've now seen some nice confirmation from other groups that this Hamiltonian is correct for ytterbium titanate as well. And so with that, I'd like to thank my collaborators. We've got the team theory here is Leon Balentz and Lucille Savary from UC Santa Barbara. And team experiment is my supervisor, Bruce Golan, who's here today. And Jacob Ruff did all the heavy lifting on the erbium titanate experiments. And then I was heavily involved in the ytterbium titanate work. And OK, for that, I'm done.